Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 166 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again. We have almost one of these mega episodes happening today. We got a lot of stuff to cover between Ms. Wilson and myself. Among these items is the Liberal Party, one of their superstar anti-gunners, Pam Damoff. Well, we all know Pam quite well. She says that she just can't take public life anymore and she's not going to run in the next election. We're going to discuss what she says her reasons for doing that are. And we're going to contrast them to what we think the real reasons for that are. So that'll be interesting. Tracy and I also went to Calgary, Alberta to award the prizes for the CCFR's Best Day Ever contest. And that contest winner was Jeremy Johnson from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, who showed up with his wonderful wife, Crystal. So we went and hung out with them for a day and a half in Calgary. We got a little bit of video to show you and show you everything that Jeremy bought with his winnings. It's pretty awesome. And Canada Post told the Liberal government that they were not interested in helping with the buyback. And this story came out a little while back, but now it's come back again because now there's talk the anti-gunners, Polly and the rest, want the government to force Canada Post to do this. Plus, there's a little bit of a lack of understanding why getting Canada Post to execute this buyback is a very, very serious public safety concern and why it's also the biggest opportunity for illegal diversion from guns to be diverted from the legal market to the illegal market in the history of the country. I'm going to break that down for you because it's very important that you understand why that is and why that's different from retailers using Canada Post to ship guns. It's not at all the same thing. Anyway, we're going to cover all of these topics and a whole lot more after we hear from our sponsors. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, we're back. So I've only got a couple of things I need to cover with you before I bring Tracy on. And I think Tracy and my talk was like, I don't know, like 40 minutes, including some clips, right? So it's a long talk. So I'm going to try to make it as brief as I can before we bring Tracy on. The first thing I want to do is the most important, which is we're going to draw the winner for the CATF, Canadian Access to Firearms, All Canadian Rifle Contest. So anyway, I did the draw just a second ago. It's one continuous clip, so you can see exactly what went on. Anyway, check it out. All right, let's make the draw for the CATF, Canadian Access to Firearms, All Canadian Rifle. It's a great contest for the CCFR, and I can't thank everyone involved enough. Donovan over at CATF, what a fantastic member of the firearms community. So if you're interested in the paper, it's a great paper. It's a really great value, and Donovan has done so much for the CCFR and so much for the community. I can't say enough about him. Also, everyone that donated a piece of this rifle and or put it together and or let us shoot it. So those people are JC Barrels, Vortex Canada, MDT Chassis, Trigger Tech, Pristine Actions, Rusty Wood Trading Company. Rusty Wood put all that stuff together, and Mission Rod and Gun Club for letting us film on the premises, on the property, and letting us test fire the rifle. So thanks to everyone who entered. It was awesome. So let's see if we can do this draw. See if I can figure this out. Okay. So here is the list, the Excel spreadsheet full of the entrance, I should say. And we just need the row range. So it starts at row 2 with our friend Jazz Preet from Winnipeg. And it goes all the way down to our friend Will in Rockyford, Alberta. So from row 2 to 8612. All right, we're going over to random.org. You guys have seen this before. It will choose a random number between including 2 and 8612. Let me double check. Looks good. All right. 7417. 7417. 74. Such a long sheet that it's a little hard to. All right. Our winner, is Brent Byers from Camrose, Alberta. Congratulations, Brent. You won the All-Canadian Rifle and everything else that came with it. So thanks, everyone, for entering. Really appreciate all the support. Really appreciate it. We couldn't do the stuff that we do without your support. So, you know, you guys are the ones that make it all happen. So thank you. Well, there you go. So congratulations to our winner. Thank you so much to everyone who entered. And thank you so much to the companies and everyone involved in making that rifle. Really appreciate the help. I can't tell you how much. Really, really appreciate it. Okay, I have one thing to go over with you before we bring Tracy on. I'm going to try to make it relatively quick. So this is me bearing my soul to all of you. This is me doing this publicly. I'm going to say things that typically gun owners won't say. All right. So if you're watching this on the Thursday, I've left for my bear hunt this morning. So you'll hear a little bit about it, you know, when I get back in the next episode kind of thing. So I'm recording this on the Tuesday of this week. So yesterday being Monday, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, back to the difficult time I had sighting in this new rifle that I bought, like over $3,000 of this ultralight rifle hunting setup, right? And if I think I was complaining about it in the last episode or the one before that. And I am having a hard time accepting that the fact that this rifle doesn't hit anything, like I can't accept that it's not me, because I can't accept that a $3,000 rifle setup can't shoot more than one or two rounds and stay on target at 100 meters, right? I have a problem with that. And I've had other people saying, oh yeah, yeah, that's what it is. And I'm like, I still can't believe that. And I'm sure that some people out there, depending on the rifle that they're running, they'll be like, yeah, mine shoots true for a number of rounds before it gets too warm and starts to shoot off. And I'm like, what the heck, right? And So anyway, I'm quite obsessed with the idea that I don't want to make a bad shot the first time I'm hunting. And hunters, you know what I mean by a bad shot. Like the animal, I still get it eventually, but it was a bad shot. I don't want that. I don't want to be that guy. So anyway, I'm like, yesterday, Monday, I'm like, I got to work this out. I got to figure out whether the problem is with the rifle or the problem is with me. And I don't care what I got to do to figure this out. So anyway, so I grabbed my new hunting rifle and I grabbed a 22 and to shoot while I'm waiting for the barrel to cool off while I try to recite this thing or figure out what's going on. And this 22, actually, there's a story to that, that's coming up in a couple of episodes. There's some interesting stuff about this new 22 I got. So I grab the guns, I go to the range. This hunting rifle is, the optic is in milliradians. So at 50 meters, I put a target out. I got the proper targets for that. I take a cold bore shot and I'm about 2 centimeters left and dead flat on elevation. I'm like, okay, right? So maybe, you know, I'm in the ballpark. That's not bad. I take another shot at it and I'm like 5 centimeters right. And I'm like, how am I flinching? Like, I could be, right? Because I haven't been practicing that much lately. I haven't been shooting that much, and I could be flinching, especially on larger rifles, because I still got this swollen lymph node in the right side of my neck, right? So I'm kind of protective of it. And I'm like, I don't know. I took another shot and it's way off. I'm like, maybe it's the heat again, right? It's just three shots. The ammo's hot, right? So anyway, I'm like, whatever. I put this thing down, unload it. Ring goes green. I put more targets up, and I put this thing at 100. I come back, and I shoot this 22. Well, it's a brand new 22, and I put an optic on it, and it's a one times optic, not 16 times, man. Like, because on that rifle, it's a red dot. So I sight this thing. It takes no time at all. I'm not really that good at sighting in rifles. It takes me quite a while, but somehow it went quite easy. I was using the sand splash on the berm at 100 to dial this thing in. So I think I only adjusted it twice. It's good to go. Then I turn to this 8-inch gong that we have at the range at 100, and I nail this thing like 8 times out of 10. The first two shots, I was like, where's this thing running? I think it was low and to the right a little bit, right? So I compensate for that, like 8 out of standing, unsupported. Right? Not like on bags, like I was shooting that hunting rifle. I'm like, okay, I can still shoot because I'm fairly proficient, to say the least, with a rifle. Okay. I have a lot of experience, and I'm like, okay, it's not me coming apart at the seams. So anyway, I take a cold bore shot at this, you know, with the hunting rifle at 100, and it's pretty close. I think it was within, I don't know, man, maybe 3 centimeters, right? As a group. Right. And I'm like, okay, maybe it is the temperature. I shoot again. It's like, I don't know, 8 centimeters off. I shoot again, and it's like equally as bad. I'm like, this is driving me stinking crazy, right? I can't trust this gun, and I'm afraid of having a bad shot. So I pack up my stuff, and I go home. I throw that, you know, that gun in the safe, and I pull out this older, it's still a Howa 1500, which is basically a Weatherby Vanguard, right? I pull that out. It's a gun I got from my buddy, and it's a bull barrel, and it's shorter, but the same kind of model of gun. I take the same ammo, and my Black Creek Lab Siberian with a bunch of magazines loaded, because I'm like, can I still shoot a regular rifle, right? The 22 is super easy. So anyway, I run right back to the range because I can't accept that this is going on. So I put a target out at 50 again. Shoot my buddy's rifle, who he probably sighted in 3 years ago, and it's pretty close, right, at 50. I'm like, fine. I shoot it again, and it's still pretty close. I'm like, okay, I'm all right with that. Maybe it's just the gun. I put it down, unload it, you know, make the range green. I was there by myself, run this target out to 100, come back, and I shoot a shot at 100, and it was within, you know, I don't know, within a better group than the size of my hand. I'm like, okay, that's acceptable. I shot a couple more times and the shots got worse. That could be me flinching, right? So I can accept that. Or it could be the barrel warming up. But I used to shoot guns like that when I did a little bit of precision shooting, because I'm not very good at that. And I don't remember the barrels having to rest like that. So anyway, I'm like, okay, I can trust this gun to take hunting. So anyway, I unload it, put it to the side, take the Black Creek Lab Siberian, which I sighted in, I don't know, 18 months ago or something. I pick that gun up. I shoot it a couple times at the berm so I can see where the splash is. I'm like, yeah, this is shooting pretty true. And I take 10 shots, right? Two five-round magazines. I think I missed a round the first time, again, to kind of figure where it was shooting. And I hit an 8-inch gong, unsupported from standing, not on bags, from standing at 100 meters. I'm like, I know how to shoot rifles, man. I there's a video of me using a T97, a Gen 1 Norinco T97 from standing, hitting a steel target, an IDPA size steel target, silhouette target at 300. And I don't know, it took me, I don't know, 4 or 5 rounds, but I hit this thing at 300 from standing. Again, no magnification, just with a red dot. That, if I remember correctly, back in the day, that was an EOTech. So, you know, great big huge reticle on there, right? So anyway, I'm like, I can still shoot. This is ridiculous. I put that rifle down, I pick up that bolt action on my buddies, and I took a shot from kneeling, right? So unsupported, kneeling and hit the 8-inch gong at 100. I'm like, okay. So you know what? That great rifle package that I was all, you know, proud of, my new hunting rifle and all that stuff, I'm not taking it. I'm taking this target rifle with me with, I guess, what some would consider an inferior optic. I'm taking it. So I need to find out what's wrong with that hunting rifle or the optic or something. Something's wrong. Maybe I didn't mount it right. I don't know. I'm doing something wrong with that thing. But anyway, I'm confident that I'll be able to put a proper shot on target. And to be honest, the way that I'm feeling right now, so there's only one opportunity for me to tell you how I'm feeling now, because by the time you've watched this, especially if you waited a couple days from when it came out, we already will have known how that turned out. But if I do see a bear and I am going to shoot him, I'm going to get to at least 100 meters, if not closer, because I don't want to take a bad shot at 150 or 200 or 250 or 300, right? So anyway, that's my viewpoint and my struggles starting today. So at least, or at least for today. So anyway, in the next episode, I will allude to you how it went. I don't know if I'm going to have Ashley Stuckless from High BC on to talk about the trip. I haven't decided that yet. We'll have to see what happens, but I'll try to leak a few details for you in the next podcast. Anyway, thanks for listening to that. Like I said, most people just wouldn't admit any of this stuff, but I think it's kind of interesting to share it with you. All right, enough of that. Let's get Tracy on the Skype. All right, via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Yo, Taka, what's going on?
Oh, just the usual monkey business. What about you?
I'm actually going for a little road tour today. I'm headed out to Trent Hills, Ontario, where I will be speaking at a town council meeting on some changes they are looking at making to the discharge of firearms bylaw, which, of course, will really impact gun owners and, in particular, hunters. So we've had a pretty good track record at defeating these things so far, and I'm going to go see if we can get that done today as well. So I've kind of got limited time, but we'll get through this stuff.
All right. Well, we've got some interesting stuff to cover, and we'll start it off with one of the most interesting pieces right out of the gate. Okay. So, Pam Damoff is a Liberal MP. I think a lot of people, I'd like to think that we've helped get her message out to Canadians, because she definitely needs the help. People need to know what Pam Damoff has to say, because it's very indicative of Liberal behavior, right? So she's probably one of the worst behaved Liberal MPs in the bunch, although they have a pretty good stable of ill-behaved Liberal MPs. Well, she's decided that she's going to withdraw from politics. And for us to kind of go through, we're going to spend a little bit of time on it, because I think it's important for a number of reasons. But if we're going to go through it properly, let's start to kind of go point by point. So the first thing that we need to know is she's decided to withdraw from politics. She's not going to run again. Why does she say that she's doing that?
Well, that information is easy to find, because the mainstream media has given her full court press to tell her side of the story. Now, of course, she's citing things like receiving death threats and, you know, extreme misogyny, and talks about the polarization of politics and the House of Commons and lack of decorum and all of these things. And she's afraid to even leave her house. And it's just been so, so awful, which is interesting, because she's pretending to be this beacon of rationality. In the Hill Times story in particular, she's extremely partisan. But in any event, those are the reasons she's citing on why she won't be running again in the next election.
Yeah. Well, I guess the next question is, why do people react the way they do to Pam Damoff? Is she this innocent, well-meaning public servant there to serve the country? Or maybe she's bringing a lot of this heat on herself. So we have a couple of clips. I think we showed this one before, certainly the second one we've shown before a couple of times. But this is interesting. She's one of the most hypocritical people that I've had to encounter of all humans that I've encountered, and incredibly toxic. So this next clip is maybe a really good example of how hypocritical she is. Anyway, check it out.
So I just want to remind the Conservative members, and in particular Mr. Calkins, that the vote on in requiring a license for a magazine was passed unanimously last night, including by Conservative members. And I would like Mr. Calkins to go and look Reese Fallon's family in the face and tell her that the elk hunt is more important than her life, because the shooter on the Danforth did not require a license to go and buy a magazine before he went and tried to slaughter people on the Danforth. So I'm sorry that Mr. Calkin doesn't like this amendment.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I want to express how troubling it is that the opposition continues to bring up a horrific crime that is impacting victims, not only of this criminal, all victims across this country, some of whom have reached out to me. But to spread a misinformation that Bill C-83 is in any way responsible for this is irresponsible.
So on one hand, she brings up a horrific crime, places it on the heads of Elk Hunters and Blaine Calkins, who was just asking questions, kicking around the idea of showing needing to show a pal to buy a magazine. And then when the tables are turned on her for when the liberals sat back and watched Paul Bernardo, one of the most notorious rapists and murderers in Canadian history, when he gets moved to medium security, like he deserves a better life or something like that, then she's offended that somebody invokes a horrific crime. I don't know.
You know, she's an interesting person because she likes to throw around the term misogyny quite a bit. You know, and as a woman, I like to think that being held accountable for the crappy things you say or for the bad policies that you support, it's not misogyny just because you're a woman, right? Like, don't hide behind your skirt on that. We've worked a long time as women to make sure that we have equal playing field. So if you're going to get into that arena, then yeah, you're going to expect some criticism of your policies. But yeah, it's interesting how she doesn't mind invoking horrific tragedies when she can put that blame on the shoulders of innocent elk hunters. But, you know, bringing up Paul Bernardo, that's just a step too far, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wild. Anyway, yeah. Whatever. Nothing has been beneath her. This is why she's getting all the heat. But let's not forget the time that she was talking about, well, you know, Canadians have rebuffed our amendments, right? It was G4 and G42,
right.
I believe.
46.
G46, yeah. of Bill C-21, you know. And it was completely revealed that they were banning a ton of hunting rifles,
yes.
Right? But they were like, oh, no, that's misinformation, conservative misinformation. But you know what? We're going to hold a bunch of extra meetings anyway because we want to listen, especially to Indigenous voices. Remember this one?
But on those particular amendments, I will acknowledge there was not enough consultation. There were not enough conversations with Indigenous peoples across the country.
And so we want to make sure we're listening and we get it right.
So how does withdrawing an amendment protect Canadians from gun violence?
Well, we're going to have four more meetings. We're going to be listening to people.
Is this an acknowledgement that those amendments were flawed?
No, it's an acknowledgement that we need to be listening to Canadians, and that's what we're going to
do. Did you feel that?
I don't know. That's why we're having four meetings, to listen.
Firearms we are currently using allows us to maintain our own food security and personal safety. To provide you some examples would be hunters use firearms to deter away aggressive bear in this.
Because we want to listen. So I think it's really important that we are listening, and then we'll come back.
With a background check and renewal every 5 years, a national ban on hunting rifles that allows us to maintain our own food security by hunting and personal security while maintaining a cultural lifestyle on the land is continued colonialism and does not respect our way of life.
We need to listen to people to see where we go forward. So I'm not going to commit to anything that will be done. We're going to listen in those four meetings and see what we need to do following that in consultation with the other parties, in consultation with Indigenous peoples.
Listening across the country and our nation here to come and see our beautiful territory. But hunting is so important. Like I said, we're so isolated.
We genuinely want to listen.
Well, not only do they not actually listen to Indigenous voices, but they're also habitual abusers of witnesses. But yeah, this is par for the course, you know, listening to the Indigenous voices.
Yeah. Well, they're always listening to Indigenous voices when the Indigenous are agreeing with them. But when they're disagreeing, they couldn't care less about the fact that they're Indigenous.
That's right.
Anyway, whatever, you know. And I think, like I said, I mean, I could have come up with 10 examples, like easily,
right.
10. I'm not exaggerating, right? If I said a million, I would have been exaggerating, like easily 10 things just like we're talking about to illustrate why people react to her the way that they do. But anyway, the last one is she had been complaining about intimidation and death threats from the gun lobby. And this was actually in some commentary in the House of Commons, and I have it, but I'm not going to show the clip because I've done enough of that. But anyway, you can find it. It's quite easy to find. So she's talking about the gun lobby. She says death threats and intimidation. And then she references the CCFR, how we visited her riding in the 2019 and 2021 elections. So yes. She's conflating death threats and intimidation. She doesn't directly say it was us that caused it or did it. But what she does, she puts us in the next sentence so that it's implied. Like, this is what these people do, right?
Oh, yeah.
And this is why people are so pissed off at politicians. It's like, well, why don't you just talk like normal people and follow the same normal rules? And now, why don't you just remind people what we did in those two elections?
Yeah, well, in 2019, you'll remember we rented that big RV and we had it wrapped with a liberal failure graphic. And we rolled into the parking lot of her campaign office. And she did a video later. She never did come out, but she did a video later saying that she was under attack by the gun lobby, like attack. And then in 2021, you were laying low because you were sick. And we did that whole election pamphlet project where we went around to ridings and we got together with groups of other people and we passed out these fact-checked brochures about the liberal failure and corruption. And once again, she complained about that as well. And that's what I'm talking about, is sort of being held accountable. I mean, those are normal functions of democracy, right? You can campaign for someone, you can campaign against them. That's not being attacked. You're not, you know, it's not a threat. It's not threatening. This is democracy. So, yeah, it's interesting how she twists things around. The eternal victim, it's sort of I like to call that a cry bully. And it's elitist, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how dare the commoners even, you know, push back against her? And, you know, again, let's recap. We drove a moving billboard around and campaigned against the liberals in the 2019 election. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was being attacked at her office, an attack. And then we distributed election brochures during an election in her riding.
Oh, yeah. So those are the attacks that she's been subject to, you know, third party election advertising. And it's interesting because both the liberal failure bus and the election pamphlets spoke a lot about kind of their failure and their corruption. But don't forget, this is the MP who said, you know, she's famous for this now and this will be her legacy, is that she said, if you think the Liberal Party is corrupt, you should check out Afghanistan. So the new slogan for the upcoming election will be liberals, not quite as corrupt as the Taliban. Like, I don't know. It's just, this is where we're at.
Well, and to finish this off, and I know you got to go, but to finish this off, you know, when I was doing the research, she had gone back and forth with, in the House of Commons, you can find that again, just go to the publication search on the House of Commons website and you'll find it. You just search Pam Damoff and then just put some quote of the words that I'm saying. But she was in having an exchange with Michelle
Rempel.
Right. She got married, so I was making sure I got the right name.
Rempel Garner.
So and she was complaining about how, you know, the political polarization and, you know, all of this hate and pitting people against each other. How do we roll this back? How do we take the temperature down? Like, she's the worst offender of that stuff, while at the same time crying that she is the victim of it. It's just, she truly is one of the most hypocritical, most toxic people I think I've ever seen in politics. And the liberals, like, they have quite a few of those people. Like, it's really bad.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so dangerous for her that she's afraid to leave her home, and it's so toxic and so much hate and misogyny that she's going to stick around for another year and a half.
Well, isn't that interesting, right? You know, she's got to get out of politics in a year and a half.
In a year and a half.
Because she can't go outside, apparently.
Yeah, so. I'm sure it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that she only has a 3% chance of winning her riding, according to the polling.
What?
So I'm sure that I'm just saying, I am sure it's not because of that, you know, not the fact that Ron Chinzer will be the next MP of her riding. So I'm sure that it plays no part in it.
Yeah, it's not. It's so that maybe is the real reason, right? She's like, oh, I'm going to suffer this humiliating defeat, and all the talk about how her constituents all line up behind how, what she says and what she thinks, which she said multiple times. They've all voted for gun control. It's like, well, they're voting for a conservative ex-police officer now.
Yeah. So maybe we'll get some real public safety in her riding. Hey.
Anyway, what a mess, man.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. What a train wreck. Wait a second. Do I have a dumpster fire emoji somewhere or a dumpster fire GIF that I can put up? All right.
I'm telling you, I still want that big red clown. I was like, pop, there we go.
Yeah. Well, we know why we're not going to do that.
I know. It'll be a meme very quickly.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about enough negative, horrific stuff going on in Canada associated with the Liberal Party of Canada. Now, some fun stuff. You and I went to Calgary to award our winner for the CCFR's Best Day Ever contest, Jeremy Johnson and his lovely wife, Crystal. We went to, we met up with them in Calgary and did our thing. So why don't you give us your account of what happened? But before we do that, we're just gonna play a clip that Brandon and Silas, our social media guys, put together for it. Anyway, check this out. How was it, Jeremy?
It was awesome. Ever as advertised.
All right. So why don't you tell us your version of what happened?
So I know that Jeremy was the winner here, but I kind of feel like we were also the winner. You know, of all the work assignments that we get, this was a pretty cool one. So we spent an amazing day in Calgary with Jeremy and his wife, Crystal, and just we did tons of shopping. We got to shoot some filato. We threw axes. We enjoyed Brazilian barbecue. We watched him spend 10 grand altogether between the Shooting Edge and the Calgary Shooting Center. Big thanks to them for their support. But we got to watch him blow 10 grand on guns and gear and just stock up on everything he ever wanted. He is a lucky duck because I'm telling you, that was an absolute awesome day. I think we're going to need to run that contest again because it was wildly popular.
It was. It was popular, and it was it's a cool prize, right? Because not only do you get a bunch of stuff, you get a little bit of travel, you get a little bit of an experience. It was really neat. And if I'm in a position to contribute my 2 cents worth, when we got to Calgary, we had dinner. We went to this Brazilian restaurant, which is, I mean, it's not just meat there, but you can go the whole night and just eat all these different kinds of meat. And that works for me because I'm on the carnivore diet, right? For 10 months now. And that worked really great. And it was just such a treat for me because usually you'll just eat a steak and maybe a couple eggs or, you know, 7 eggs and a pound of bacon or whatever. But there was like, I don't know, 10 different meats that I got. It was almost like I had my, you know, own smorgasbord. So I, to be honest, I floated that to Jeremy and his wife, like, hey, you know, for dinner tonight, there's this restaurant that we went to last night. It's really good if you're interested. And they were interested legitimately. I was like, don't do it for me. But I got to eat that twice.
It was so good. We got that 2 nights in a row. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, there's all kinds of stuff we have to do. And most of it I enjoy. But this was an extra special treat. So yay, Jeremy. But that was a fun contest. And I want to do that one again. That was neat. Yeah.
The restaurant was called Bolero, by the way, in Calgary. So
It was wonderful.
Okay. Yeah. So the next thing we need to talk about is Canada Post. Okay. This is kind of weird, a little bit prickly. So as we all know, Canada Post has told the government that they're refusing to assist in the buyback. And so the idea was is that the government would issue cardboard boxes, long, slender boxes, like, you know, that rifles come in or shotguns. And the government would send these boxes to you. You'd pack in your prohibited firearm, the one that's too dangerous to own, the one that is the reason for mass shootings in the United States. And then you would go to the Canada Post outlet and you would, with all your boxes, so for me, that's 7 boxes. For some people that you know, it's 16 boxes, including, I think, 2 that are 50 cals. So they'd have to be huge, long, slender boxes. When it comes to some people, we're talking like probably 60 boxes on a pallet jack, and go into the Shoppers Drug Mart or the mall and start handing in multiple prohibited rifles in boxes.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because this is actually an old story. They brought this out 2 years ago. They had floated the idea of using Canada Post and they said no then. But of course, that temperature has been turned up by the Liberals and by Poly trying to force them as a crown corporation to do it. And Poly's sort of putting it, you know, the blame for them not wanting to do it on the fact, you know, some union reps said that they were worried about dealing with disgruntled gun owners. But there's a CBC story that actually quotes, they've refused to comment, but sources within the organization said that many post offices have little security with no alarm systems or surveillance cameras. Zero, said a Canada Post employee when asked to describe security at his post office in a small municipality. The government is crazy if it thinks we can do this safely. And you're going to talk to why it is that that would be very unsafe.
Well, I think not everybody understands this. And to be honest, and the reason why I say this prickly, there's this guy that was in the CCFR closed group on Facebook. And, you know, because of multiple examples, it clearly this guy can't stand the CCFR, you know?
Yes.
But I don't know. I had him and I never intervene in the groups because I'm not in there. But for this individual, I've intervened. This is now the second time because, you know, it just turns in, he just creates these big fights. And, but for some reason he complains when he gets kicked out of the group. I don't know what's going on with this guy. But anyway, it was just his interaction with you and some other people saying that, it's, you know, it's no different that the Canada Post ships commercially firearms than it is to do a buyback. And he had his heels dug in and he went back and forth. And so, and accused us of damaging the retail market and all the rest of that stuff, just ridiculousness. So he's not in the group anymore. And since he hates us so much, maybe he can find another group that wants to listen to his opinion. But I thought, you know what, it's important that people understand very clearly why this is almost an unprecedented public safety risk. This is like literally risk to life and limb for post office employees, for gun owners, for everybody involved, bystanders even. This is it. The difference between Canada Post shipping commercially firearms and the or a gun buyback. So when a big gun store is going to do a shipment of firearms, what happens is they assemble all those firearms in an area. Canada Post comes with their own vehicle and they take all those guns. Those guns are never floating around in the public or being dragged on a cart through a mall or through Shoppers Drug Mart to a postal outlet. Plus,
right,
they're distributed at random through the entire postal system and then delivered to gun owners. Do some of those guns disappear? I'm sure a handful every year disappear because a handful of all kinds of mail disappears, including firearms. So fine, mm-hmm. That's just what happens in a society where people steal things from each other. On the other side of it, and plus, we know that that happens all the time. So those packages are also filtered out over time everywhere. It's not one big blast where everybody in the country knows, hey, during these 12 months or these 6 months or this month, there's going to be 500,000 firearms flowing through postal outlets.
Yeah.
In contrast, when you're doing a buyback, you're asking 100,000 Canadians, licensed Canadians, to transport around 550,000 firearms too dangerous to own in these long, slender boxes into postal outlets. So we've already said, hey, you know, for some people, it could be 60 guns, carts and carts of firearms. All a criminal has to do during the buyback that everybody in the country knows about is sit there at their local post office for 2 days, count the number of long, slender boxes going in there, and at the end of the day, decide whether or not they're going to go in there at closing time and rob these people. And the criminal will also determine, are there enough long, slender boxes? Are there enough, you know, semi-autos with detachable magazines that are apparently machine guns and assault weapons for me to justify injuring or even murdering the person who's between me and those boxes.
Yeah.
And each one of those rifles, they could get anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 for those rifles on the street. So if there's 10 rifles there, that could be a $50,000 haul for them. Easy money all day long. And they know that it's going to happen. Everyone in the country is going to know that that's going to be going on for that period of time. So this is the difference. And if you can't see that, I don't know what else I can do to help you understand why that is a problem. And commercially, it is far less of a problem. And the other thing is, during that time, all the postal employees will know that there are guns coming in nonstop throughout the year. Some guys, you know, again, showing up with 60 of these boxes, some of them 50 cow boxes, you know, 4 feet long, and will know full well those are guns. They'll know exactly what they are. What's to stop a Canada Post employee from cutting that box open, taking out the gun, throwing a lead pipe in there, sealing it up, sending it off to the RCMP? And then when it gets to the RCMP, they're like, hey, there's no gun in here. Hey, Rod, you didn't send us a gun. We're not paying you. And we're going to launch a criminal investigation for firearms trafficking against you. And I'm like, hey, bro, I sent you that. And so now you've got diversion happening through Canada Post because it's going the other way. It's going towards the RCMP, and there's somebody left to blame right at the other end. Not a retailer that ships, you know, 500 of these things a month that can easily say, well, this was a secure thing. It came from, these things were picked up from our store and went straight to the mail system. Like, this is why this is a problem. And for Pauly Sessouvien and other crazy people to say, you know, this is a Crown corporation, they should be forced to do this. Like, the people that get hurt, this could be the biggest long gun diversion opportunity in the history of Canada. Can you imagine how many of these guns would go missing?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what people don't take a minute to think about. They're like, oh, wow, Canada Post already mails guns. It's a completely different system than what's going on now. It's incredibly dangerous. And I've said since the beginning that it's virtually impossible to do this and to try and shoulder this on the backs of Canada Post workers. You know, if something tragic did happen, those guns got diverted and somebody got hurt, or somebody got hurt in a, you know, a heist of a post office after closing one night, who's going to answer for that, right?
Yeah. But you know what? I'll tell you, all the people involved in this wouldn't care about that. They'd be like, well, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. You know, like, that's how they would look at it. Those lives don't matter. Only the lives that help their political agenda matter. So it really is amazing to me how people can run this double standard. It's just, it's really, really remarkable. I don't know, man. I
don't know.
This is a huge diversion opportunity and, you know, a way to get thousands, if not hundreds, if not thousands of guns from the legal market into the illegal market. And to my knowledge, no country on earth has ever attempted something this stupid. But leave it to the Liberals and their lapdogs, the NDP and the Bloc. Leave it to them to attempt something so dangerous, dangerously stupid as this.
Yeah.
No country's ever done this for a reason. So how it's supposed to be done is you have drop-off centers and you have police. And you have these drop-off centers everywhere, and you have appraisers right there at the drop-off center so they can say, yeah, this is a real gun. This isn't an airsoft rifle you stuck in a box. This is a real gun. This is the serial number. It matches what you have, and it's worth this, and here's your check, and there you go. And then they've got the police there for security to make sure none of them get diverted. That's how it's done. But the Liberals know they can't do it, and they couldn't do it from day one, so this is what they're willing to do to cover up for their complete incompetence and their lack of concern for public safety.
Yeah, well, I don't think they'll actually ever get it done. They've extended that amnesty out past the next federal election, which sort of proves the point that it's a political move and has nothing to do with public safety. And the rhetoric will be, you know, elect us again, give us a fourth mandate, and this time we'll get it done. And Pauly will probably fall for it because they do every time.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. So, but anyway, whatever. I thought that was important for us to kind of go through those details. All right.
Yeah, I think so too.
Again, switch over to something really positive. I think we just need an opportunity to say thank you to a great Canadian company who has decided that they are going to make a substantial donation to all the individuals that are attending the CCFR AGM in Calgary on May the 25th.
Yeah, so I really want to thank Kailani. They're in a Canadian company owned by Sean Alexander. And everyone who attends the fundraising banquet on May 25th in Calgary, you can find tickets at ccfragm.ca, will receive one of these awesome branded tumblers. Now, the cool thing about these is it comes with two different lids. So it comes with like a lid that's sort of like a sippy cup lid if you want to make a hot coffee in there or even a mixed drink or whatever. It's like your typical sippy cup lid that you would use in your car. However, if you're up at the cottage or the hunt camp or wherever and you want to drop a beer in there and use it as like an insulated cup, it's got a special top just for that. And you get both with it. So I love this because it's like a dual purpose cup, a really nice quality, beautiful colors. And yeah, Kailani's just been awesome to us as well. They've donated a huge cooler package that we'll be auctioning off at the auction. So you can look for that online and in person for the May 25th event. And those coolers look absolutely beautiful. I'm definitely going to be investing in some of those myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, huge thanks to Sean for that.
So Kailani, just so you know, it's a Canadian company operating out of Calgary, Alberta. And their products are really, really high quality. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm tough on gear, so yeah. I'll be needing some.
So thank you, Sean, for that. Really appreciate the help. And yeah, all these cups say CCFR on them, so this is great. Everybody gets one of those just for attending the AGM. Pretty awesome.
Yes.
And we're going to have those cups in the store, I think, too, right?
Yeah, they're going to be for sale in the store as well, probably after the AGM. So if you weren't able to make it, you'll be able to get your own. But yeah, watch for those to come out on all our socials and keep an eye on the store because they'll be in there.
Yeah, they're by Kailani.
Yes.
Kailani. All right. National Range Day is coming up. Just to mention it, I do have one comment on that, though. I know you have a big event. And I know a lot of people are. We probably have, I don't know, 100 events still going on across the country. But it was a busy spring for us, and it was really busy last year. The first year that we did it, we actually paid somebody to call up all the wildlife federations and different organizations to get them to participate in it, because it's really important that we have a national range day. It's not a CCFR thing. It's a firearm community thing. But we hadn't done that for the last 2 years. But still, it's going well. But my expectations are always a little higher. So that's coming up. And you've got a big event, as usual, going on at EOSC, your range.
Oh, yeah. We've got bouncy castles, games for the kids. We've got barbecue, cotton candy, popcorn. We've got a kid's silhouette steel range, cowboy action. Vortex will be there. Rifle, pistol, shotgun. It's awesome. You can check it all out at nationalrangeday.ca. You can find an event near you. If you're having one, register it. If you didn't get it together this year in order to do one, don't worry. You can get on for next year. And if you're somewhere maybe rural or whatever and you know there isn't an event near you, just take June 1st as an opportunity for you to take some colleagues or some neighbors or some friends and take them out shooting and let them experience the shooting sports. That's the point of it. So no matter how large or small, everyone can participate.
Yeah. And hopefully next year, because, you know, the Liberals are going to hang on for the 18 months because they even extended the election a week so that they got a whole raft of Liberal MPs that will get their pension if they hang on one more week, apparently. So,
yeah, they know they're not going to win.
Yeah, and they know they're not going to win, so they're going to grab every dollar they possibly can on the way out the door, right? So anyway, we should have a little bit more time next summer, and then I think we'll also have more resources. So what we'll do is we'll push it again. We'll go around to every single organization and be like, okay, here's how you can participate. Here's why you want to do it. Will you do it? Things like that, because I think if everyone pulls together, then we can make this even bigger than it is. I mean, it's the biggest national, you know, range day, as it were, in Canadian history as it is. But to me, that's still a low bar. We want to make it like almost a national holiday, even if the government ignores us.
Absolutely. That's what it is, to celebrate the amazing people in our community. And we can totally do that. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and every single person can sort of be an advocate for it. You know, get a hold of if you're a member of a wildlife organization or a provincial organization or a club or even any of the other firearms organizations, get a hold of them and ask them what they're doing to help support it. And yeah, I mean, it's coming up in less than a month, but it'll come back around next year. It's always the first Saturday in June. So start prepping for next year. Let's blow it up.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to wait for the CCFR to do it. Although that's what we do. That's our mandate. So of course we'll do it, but you know, you can be that advocate at your own range too. So
yes,
or your own organization. Okay. Next thing. We've had this interesting relationship with City TV. Some City TV reporters do a really, really great job of representing the reality of the firearms community in contrast with the criminal element in Canada responsible for firearm-related violence. And then, of course, you have other people that, you know, the notorious video that we showed. I think we even showed it again in the last podcast where it's a City TV reporter talking about the gun ban, the assault style weapons ban, so-called of the Liberals on May 1st, 2020, and then showing a full auto mag dump, full and it was, you know, full capacity magazine. But unlike those people, there are a couple of really good actual high quality journalists over at City TV. I deal with one myself every once in a while when there's something to talk about, and then there's Christina Howerun.
Yeah, Christina and I, we've done a couple of things together now, actually. And I actually flew out to Calgary to be part of this really critical documentary. And she's very interesting because she always covers these issues from a place of honesty, which I find very different and unique about her. And she's genuinely interested in getting to the bottom of the story. So, I went out there. She talked to me. She talked to J.R. Cox from The Shooting Edge. She did a great segment with Amanda Fisher, competitive shooter. And it was just sort of talking about C21 and the handgun ban, how it affects, it was sort of Alberta focused, but how it affects Albertan firearms owners. Will it do anything about crime? Like, what is the goal here? And yeah, she did a wonderful, wonderful job of it. So that's out in its full length. You can find it on their website, but it's also on all of our socials. And I suggest everybody have a look at it because there's some interesting commentary in there. And yeah, I'm appreciative.
Yeah, well, it's really great when the mainstream media decides to portray things as they actually are, right?
Ding dong. Yeah, it's crazy.
Christina's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, she is. And she's not a gun person, but she's like, this narrative doesn't seem right. Let me do some investigative journalism into this and uncover the truth. And boom, there it is.
Well, and she's strong enough to make that happen, right? Whereas most other people just cave. They're like, oh, you know, I don't need any trouble at work, you know, because it's, anyway. Check that out.
She does a lot of good work.
Yeah. I watched the first episode and it was really great. Mm-hmm. As well as her other one called The Gun Run, what was it?
Veracity or whatever. Yeah, that was a really neat one. She was talking about the source of crime guns and where are they really coming from.
Yeah.
And she had some really like crazy good interviews in that. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll just for old time's sake, throw that back out on the socials as well so everyone can have a look at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's really interested in the issues. So
for sure. Mm-hmm. And the last thing, just a quick note. We just got some correspondence from the Federal Court of Appeal, and Alberta has been granted intervener status on our case, which is great.
Yes.
I mean, they provinces can't be denied anyway. It was a formality, but Alberta is showing up and they're going all the way with us. So we appreciate the help.
Absolutely. It's great to see the provinces stacking up behind us. Sends a pretty clear message to the Liberal government in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I'm still getting bills, legal bills for that. So I would be really happy when this one's over because it's this unfunded liability, you know, as they call them, like Canada Pension is, right? It's like I don't know what the bill's going to be at the end. I just got to keep paying these invoices. So
just keep paying it.
Yeah, it'd be great when that's over, and it would be nice to win one. But anyway, all right, we've covered everything, 37 minutes worth. Actually, you know what? Plus the clips. So anyway, it was a big episode. I will let you go because I know you have things to do. So thanks for the update. And I guess we'll see you next time.
All right. We'll see you then.
All right. That's going to do it for episode 166 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching. I have one very important thing to talk about before I let you go. And that's Field Officer of the Month, not just for 1 month, but for 2 months. So we missed Field Officer of the Month, I think, in the last two or three. Well, I guess it would be last two episodes because it's been really, really busy. There's been a lot going on. It's going to be busy, I think, for still for another month. It's going to be crazy because I still have more travel to do. So does Tracy. But in about a month, it should start slowing down. So no one will be happier about that than I will. Maybe Tracy, because she's been running around like a madwoman also. But anyway, forgive us for forgetting that or not having time to cover it. We're going to do it right now. So Field Officer of the Month for March 2024 is our great friend Connor Ware. Congratulations, Connor. I think he's with the Alberta team. Really appreciate the help. I can't tell you how much. And for April 2024, we've got Jason Warren being Field Officer of the Month from the Quebec team. So gentlemen, really appreciate your effort. And I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing me say it. It's like a broken record. When it comes to volunteer effort by our volunteers, it's extremely meaningful because like I'm an extremely busy person, but I'm not special. I think most people out there that work and have a lot to do are really extremely busy. And for people to carve out time from their personal lives to work for free on behalf of themselves, fair enough, but on behalf of 100,000 gun owners across the country that they've never met by supporting the CCFR, that's pretty meaningful, man. So if people don't even know that you're out there volunteering to benefit you, I will thank these field officers and all our volunteers on your behalf because I find that really, really meaningful, pretty special. So anyway, really appreciate it. In case you either forgot or you didn't know what Field Officers of the Month get over at the CCFR, they get a one-year free subscription to Canadian Access to Firearms, a classified newspaper. So thank you to Donovan, our great friend Donovan over at CATF for graciously donating that to all our Field Officers of the Month. Also a $100 gift certificate for the CCFR online store. Get some CCFR gear and of course a mention not only in the CCFR radio podcast, also in CATF in the paper and also on our television show on WOW TV, CCFR radio on the air. So anyway, there you go. All right. We got through everything. It was a bit of a long episode, but I really appreciate you hanging out in there with us. Thanks so much for watching. Make sure you share the podcast. If you want to become a member of the CCFR, you can do that at ccfr.ca. If you want to be a member of the Insiders Club, the Insiders Group, that gets you in a web meeting with Tracy and I once a month. You can do that by contributing $20 or more on a recurring basis to the CCFR, and you will automatically be put into that group. We do draws for prizes on every meeting as well, just for the insiders. Really appreciate all of their help as well. All right, take care, everyone, and we will see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.